So we have so far in this text covered, you can read the book later if you wish. You can just listen and then read on your own. That will be easier for you to pay attention. And then it's good for you to summarize at home and read what we have discussed. So we have talked so far about object and the subject. And science spends all its time in fixing the objective world, science and economics and politics. And that is good. You know, we have so much progress, so many new inventions. We have, in many ways, conquered nature. But life is still stressful. The level of stress has increased. Problems have increased. There are more conflicts, more wars. And what is the reason? The reason the rishis, the great sages in the past told us, it is because we have spent all our time in taking care of the object, the objects, emotions and thoughts, the world. But we have not attended to the perceiver, feeler and thinker, the inner self, the subject, who am I? And then, of course, taking care of the spiritual center in us, Om, the consciousness, is far away. We have not even approached the subject. The psychologists, to some extent, the psychiatrists worked on it, mostly from a therapy point of view. But our rishis, the ancient sages, analyzed the what they call as the layers of our personality. And that's what we'll talk about today, which is in chapter number 4. You can read that at home. So the personality layers, it says that we have 5 layers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, covering Om, the consciousness, the God within, the self, the spirit, the consciousness. Even though it is all pervading, it cannot be covered, but our vision is obscured. I'm not able to see the Lord within because my vision is obscured. Why? Because our attention is on the 5 personality layers. So the first one is the gross body or the food sheath, which is the body we can see, you know, male or female, young or old, short or tall, black or white. And the majority of the world is busy taking care of this particular aspect, the physical body, which is called the food sheath because it is made of food, because the father and mother ingested food and created us. And then we sustain it with food. By eating the food, I maintain this body. And so the food sheath is where most of our energies are spent. Eating and then drinking and then keeping up the house. I need to sustain, protect this body. The money I have to acquire, the name, the fame, you know, the relationships, you know, my wife, my children. We're not saying that one should not take care of the body or the body is not important. But too much emphasis on the body is bad. You know, like we see people undergoing plastic surgery and modification. And so all our energy is spent in taking care of the body. So the body, the gross body that we can see, seems to be the main focus. And even I'm collecting wealth and building a bigger house so that the body may be protected, I may be safe. So everything is done for the body, which is okay, but that is should not be my only focus in life. Then the second is the physiological functions. The physiological functions are the 5, the various physiological systems, the digestive system, the circulatory system, the respiratory system. And our rishis, long time ago, came up with the 5 pranas, or the 5 physiological functions. So pranayam, that's why pranayam, when we do in yoga, that is control of the breath. So the first one is prana, is the intake. So when I take the breath in, that is prana, that is intake. And also intake can not only breath, but also food. You know, I intake food. Then I intake from my eyes, I see, then I hear. So all kinds of intake are called prana, the physiological functions. So they are more subtler than the body. The gross body you can see, But the physiological functions you can equate to the nervous system, the hormonal system, the endocrine system, for which controls the physical body, controls my muscles, controls my heart, my lungs, and so on. So the first one is intake or prana. Second is apana or excretion. So what food we intake, what we don't need, we excrete, or we may excrete through the urine or even breathing out. I intake oxygen and I breathe out carbon dioxide. So excretion. So that is excretion can also be through the sweat. You know, when we exercise, a lot of the, the elements are excreted. So that is called apana. And the third physiological system is called samana or digestion. And that we all know. The digestive system, we digest the food. And then vyana. Vyana means circulation. So it is the circulatory system. The heart, the lungs, and heart and the where the oxygen circulates, the blood vessels and all that. So these systems were described by our rishis thousands of years ago. So they knew that there are physiological systems which control our body. And the fifth one is very interesting. It's called udana. Now, udana has different meanings. One meaning is thinking, which Swamiji mentions in the book. But there is another meaning which I have read from other commentators where they say udana is forceful expulsion. So when you expel something forcefully, the udana is the physiological system that comes into place. And the thing is sneezing. Like when I sneeze very loudly, the whole, the respiratory system forcefully expels whatever is blocking my nose. But another forceful expulsion is at the time of death. When we die, what they tell us is that the body stays here. It gets cremated or buried. It doesn't go anywhere. The Om, the consciousness, again doesn't go anywhere. That is all pervading. That is God. That is Brahman. But the mind and intellect, which is called the subtle body, also some people call it the shuttle body, which actually shuttles from body to body. So it's the mind and intellect, which is the subtle body, which gets expelled. So udana comes into play at the time of death, and the mind and intellect is forcefully expelled, and this subtle body, called the individuality or the jiva. Because see, the body, we all have the same body. I mean, there are some superficial differences. The body is the same. Om, or the consciousness, is the same. But what distinguishes me from her, from him, from her, from him, is the mind, the emotions, the intellect, which is the ideas. So her emotions are different from mine. His ideas are different from mine. So the mind and intellect is called the personality or the subtle body that gets expelled. And the vasanas or the tendencies are what decide where my body will go. Depending on how I have lived my life, this subtle body, which is at the time of death, either goes to heaven or hell, depending on my actions. And then after I have fulfilled my karmas, my good karmas, I enjoy in heaven. My bad karmas, I may enjoy in hell. Either that, or we believe this world itself can be heaven or hell based on your karmas. But anyway, all the scriptures tell us there are subtle worlds where the souls go to enjoy or suffer the consequences. And after having done that, then this individuality, this mind and intellect, subtle body takes on a new gross body, enters the mother's womb and continues its evolutionary journey. And it could be a womb, it could be a human womb, it could be a dog's womb, it could be a cow, it could be a mosquito. Wherever, based on my karmas, based on my actions, I get a new body and I get a new family. Or it could be in the womb of a great yogi, a great meditator, or a very evolved mother, from where I can continue my spiritual journey. So the kind of womb I get depends on my actions. So it could be good or it could be bad. And that's why some children, are born with mental defects. Other children are brilliant, very intelligent, very advanced. It's not God who is playing favorites. It is our own karmas that decide what kind of womb I get, what kind of life I get, what kind of family I get. So Udana is the forceful expulsion of the subtle body. So that is the physiological functions. Then we come to the mental sheath, what we call as M, which is the seat of emotions. And the mental sheath is said to be the indecisive. It's like when I'm not sure what I should do. That's why they say don't get overwhelmed by your emotions. People say, I was so emotional, I didn't know what to do, I couldn't even think. And so the mind is where the impulses come from the body. So when I see something, like if I see a person coming at me with a knife or a gun, and then the intellect knows, okay, this person is dangerous, so let's run away. Or I run away, or I call the police, or, you know. But if I see somebody who is very loving and friendly, whom I haven't seen in a long time, then I run immediately, you know, to embrace that person, give them a hug. Why? Because I remember, my intellect tells me, she's a friend, she's a very sweet person. So the mental sheath is the indecisive sheath, where the seat of emotions. And that is very important, of course. What, the emotional sheath is very important. That determines love, compassion, kindness, sharing. But also there can be negative emotions like jealousy, greed, selfishness, and so on. So the mental sheath then depends on the intellectual sheath, which we call as the intellect, to make the decisions. So as we had talked last week, the mental sheath is, the mind is like the lower clerk, which gets all the mail, all the messages, and then presents it to the boss, summarizes and says, this is the mail, this is that. And then the boss, the intellect, makes the decisions. And the intellect decides based on past knowledge. Because I know that putting my hand in fire, as I was a child, I put my hand and burned. So the intellect remembers. So the next time it won't. So the intellect is the decisive factor which decides. Okay, this is I should do, this I should not do. But if the mind listens to the intellect, then such a person is said to be yukta, united. The mind and intellect work together. But if the mind says, I'm going to do what I want, then that becomes a problem. So if the intellect says, I should get up in the morning and meditate, and the mind says, you know, come on, you know, let's sleep for a half an hour more, you know, then, so that is what. So intellect is said to be the decisive factor, and change in my life can only happen if the intellect decides that it is beneficial for me to change. Then only I can take my life higher. Talking about change, you might have heard this story. There was this monk, you know, who was a vegetarian, and one day he, you know, generally the devotees used to bring lunch, but one day there was nobody available to bring lunch. So he said, okay, you know, I'll go out and have some pizza. So he had $20 in his wallet. So he goes to the pizza shop, and the pizza man recognizes him because the monk, you know, used to walk by and all. And so he says, sir, what can I get you? And he knew he was vegetarian. So he said, well, how much is the pizza? He says, well, cheese pizza is $9.99. If you get one vegetable, one topping is $10.99, two toppings is $11.99. But if you get all the vegetables, it will be $14.99. That's the all vegetarian pizza. So the monk in his philosophical attitude says, I want all in one, all in one. So he wanted all the toppings. So the man made the pizza, gave it to him, and the monk gave him $20. And he was waiting, and the man got busy serving other customers, making the pizza and all that. And so the monk says, you know, what about my change? He said, sir, change comes from within. He was a philosopher too. So he talked to him in philosophy. So, so change comes from within. So it's when I decide that I want to change my life. And most of us spend all our time either taking care of the gross body or physiological, you know, exercising, heart, or emotional. I must read good books, and I will read poetry and listen to music, or intellectual, reading, studying, all the time trying to acquire knowledge. And then the fifth sheath is called the causal body or the bliss sheath, which is the vasanas. And this is the unmanifest state. Vasanas are said to be the causal body because they are the cause of my birth. Each one of us took birth because we had unfulfilled vasanas. Our desires were not fulfilled, and we were born with so many desires. And so each human being takes birth to satisfy the desires. And the goal of life is to reduce the desires, reduce the vasanas, and become one with God, with the Self. So it is also called the ignorance sheath or the bliss sheath, because when I'm in deep sleep, which, when we go into deep sleep, also happens in this class, I notice that sometimes. But when we go into deep sleep, then we are with that inner silence, with that depth of that. So the deep sleep is when we are in bliss, right? When you ask somebody, how was your sleep? Oh, it was wonderful. I had deep sleep. But if my sleep was disturbed and I was being woken up and phone calls and I was stressed, and then I say, no, I didn't get the deep sleep. So my mind was not rested. So bliss sheath is also called ignorance. It is the deep sleep. It is the innermost sheath. And that is when we are in bliss, but also it is the sheath of ignorance, where at that time I know nothing. See, in deep sleep, we know nothing. And people could come, take away, walk into our house, steal our furniture, take our everything, and we could keep on sleeping. So that is called the causal body. So these five sheaths as if cover the consciousness. Consciousness cannot be covered, but our attention is so much on these five that we forget to pay attention to consciousness. Consciousness cannot be covered. It's like the sun. Now, today was a cloudy day. So you say the sun is covered by the clouds, right? We always say, oh, I can't see the sun. The sun is covered by this cloud. Can the cloud ever cover the sun? The cloud is so small, maybe 5 miles or 10 miles or 20 miles wide, and the sun is millions and billions of miles away and billions of miles in size, 100,000 times bigger than the Earth. It's huge and it is so bright, and it illumines the whole universe, the whole solar system. How can this little cloud cover the sun? So the cloud, in fact, the cloud were to get close to the sun, would get burned. And if the cloud had to cover the sun, it has to be bigger than the sun, right? Like this tablecloth, I have to cover this table. So the tablecloth has to be bigger than the table. So how could this cloud cover the sun? The cloud doesn't cover the sun. The cloud covers my vision, so I cannot see the sun. So, secondly, the cloud can only be seen when there is sunlight. If it's dark, you won't even see the cloud. So, to see the cloud, you need the sun. So, similarly, it's the Om, the consciousness, is like the sun, which is all illumining, brilliant. But these five sheets as if cover my vision. So, my attention is all on these five sheets, and I don't pay attention to Om, the consciousness. So that is called covering. Covering means my attention is blocked. It is covered by these five sheets, these five layers of my personality, and as if the sun is covered. So the goal of spirituality is to realize or know or turn my attention to the consciousness, the Om, the illumining presence. And that is the whole goal. And that is also what we do in meditation. When I am meditating, my attention from the body, slowly it goes to the breath. Then from the breath, it goes to the thoughts. So from the body, it goes to the physiological functions, then goes to the mind, the intellect, and ultimately becoming one with that inner consciousness. So that is that's what meditation does, takes us inward, where this consciousness, this illumining principle is present. It's there. It is there everywhere, but in us, it is considered to be the deepest layer of my personality. Deepest does not mean the depth in the sense of insight, but it is the most subtle, the most the least visible. Let's put it that way. It's the least visible to us. The gross body is visible. The breath I can feel, the emotions, I can feel my emotions, my thoughts, intellect, I can feel my vasanas, my desires I know about. But this Om, the consciousness, is what is not known to us. Even though we are functioning because of the presence, I'm walking because God is in me, you are listening because God is in you. And this consciousness, how does it illumine the body? How does the consciousness illumine the body? How does it give us life? So what the seers tell us, that it's the subtle body which is the reflecting medium. So this consciousness is reflected in the subtle body, and that's how the gross body gets life. So it's like the mirror. Now there is a mirror outside which is, you know, bright clean mirror. And the sunlight falls on the mirror, and here the room is completely dark, but the window is open. The light from the mirror gets reflected in the room and illumines the room. The sun, it directly is not illumining the room. It is reflected in the mirror, and this beam of light comes in here. Of course, the sun overall is giving us light, but say if you see a beam of light coming into the room and the room is dark, you say, where is it coming? From the mirror. The sun, which is reflected in the mirror, is illumined here. And depending on if the mirror is clean, the beam of light is clean, shiny. If the mirror is dirty, muddy, then the beam of light won't be very clear. So similarly, the mind and intellect is like that mirror, which the consciousness reflects in the mind and intellect and illumines the body, gives life to the body. So if the mind and intellect is clean, is pure, then such a person has a pure life. If the mind and intellect is dirty, it's impure, it's negative, then such a person's life is dirty. And when the mind and intellect departs at the time of death, the body is still there, consciousness is still there, but that body has no life. Right? The body is there, the eyes are there, the nose is there, the ears are there. The brain is still there. You tell him the person is dead. Tell him Einstein, after he died, you ask them how much is 2 plus 2. Einstein won't be able to say, even though he was the world's greatest physicist. So it's the mind and intellect, the subtle body, which when it departs at the time of death, then such a person, the body is there, the Om is there, the consciousness is there, but the person is not alive. The subtle body is no longer available to reflect the consciousness, and then such a person, then we say, okay, he's gone. So who is gone? The mind and intellect is gone. The body is still there, but the body then we cremate or bury or get rid of it because it is no longer useful. It becomes a source of problems. And so the attention we should transfer from the seen to the seer, and that's what we'll meditate on today. I'll just briefly mention that, the seen to the seer, and then today we'll pay attention to the ultimate seer. So there are three pairs. Like the chair is seen, right? Chair is seen by who? By the eyes. But the eyes are not affected by the chair. It's not that because I see a green sweater, my orange sweater, so my eyes don't become orange. With a black shirt, they don't become black. With a green book, they don't become green. My eyes remain the same, but all the objects are seen by the eyes. So the objects are seen, the eyes are the seer. And the eyes know all the objects. But the objects don't know the eyes. Like the chair doesn't know that I'm looking at it. Now the eyes are seen by who? By the mind. The mind and intellect They know the condition of my eyes. Say my eyes are getting blurry, I need glasses, or I have a cataract, I need surgery, or my eyes are hurting, or my eyes are itching. So who knows that? The mind and intellect. So the eyes may be weak or may be bright, but my mind remains the same. It doesn't become, my eyes are weak, so it becomes weak. My eyes are bright, so it becomes bright. Not only the eyes, but all the sense organs, like the ears. Same thing, I can hear the sounds, but the mind knows the condition of the ear. Okay, my hearing is good, my hearing is not good. So that's the second pair. So the object is known by the eyes are known by the mind. The mind includes mind and intellect. Now who knows the mind and intellect? The consciousness. It is the consciousness because of which I can tell today my mind is upset. Today I'm confused. I don't know what's going on. I can't understand what's in the book or what's being said. So there are three pairs, the object and the eyes. The eyes and the mind and the consciousness. And so today's meditation, we will transfer our attention inward to that inner seer, which is the consciousness is not known to anybody else. It does not become an object. You cannot say, I know my consciousness. Consciousness is the subject that knows everything. Consciousness knows the state of my mind. It knows the state of my body. It knows the condition of my eyes. It even whatever my eyes are seeing are known by the mind. And then it is ultimately the consciousness that is illumining the mind. And then the mind knows the eyes and the eyes know the objects. So that is how the knowledge occurs. It is the illumining consciousness, which we call as God or Om or Brahman or the life principle. The self, what we call the big self, big S, and that is the kind of the hierarchy of knowledge. Is that clear? Is that any questions, any comments, anything that you may like to add?
On the prana, is that, I've read other places where it says that prana is the life force, the body.
Yes. Yeah, there are, see the Sanskrit words can be used, the same word can have multiple meanings depending on the context. So prana, some places it means the life principle, yes, the force. The life force is called prana, you're very right. But here the pranas are the physiological functions. Prana also means the breath. That's why we say pranayama. In pranayama, we don't control the excretory system or digestive or circulatory, we only control the intake and exhalation and inhalation of breath. So prana has various meanings, you're absolutely right, depending on the context in which. So that's why Sanskrit word, you have to be very careful in which context is it being used. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So prana does mean the life force. And in a way it is, because that's why they say, no, his breath is gone. When a person is no longer breathing, they say his pranas are gone. His life is gone. How do we tell? How does the doctor tell? Because he's not breathing. He's not breathing. His heart is not beating. So, yeah. Pranas are the physiological functions, but also can be called as the life principle, life force.
I also heard another term, Shakti. Is that the same thing?
Shanti?
Shakti.
Shakti. Shakti means energy. Shakti means energy. It means power. That's different from prana. It is the energy.
Energy from
whatever energy, yeah. Like energy from, say, from burning of coal or electric energy. That is energy. The energy within us that makes us function. So Shakti is the energy. So it's the energy again comes from, where does it come? It comes from food. You know, from eating, I get energy to work. And then the food, then it stimulates the digestive system to circulate, you know, the energy. And then that's how the mind works. That's why if you haven't eaten for a week or 10 days, people who fast, you know, their mind gets dull. You know, people who like, say, Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Cesar Chavez, we heard about them, how they fasted for many days, 30 days, 40 days, only drinking water to protest against something. The one of the things that is very powerful in them is the mind becomes dull because there is no energy to nourish the mind. So Shakti is the energy. It is the, that's why we say we are a combination of matter and energy. The human beings are a combination of matter and energy, what they call as matter and spirit. You know, so the one is the gross matter and the other one is the energy, and that's what circulates in the atoms. You know, there's a proton and a neutron, and the electrons circulate around. So that is energy. So Shakti is the energy. It is a little bit different from prana. It is actually quite different from prana.
Right, one you told that is coming from food, that's the physical Shakti,
mm-hmm.
but mental determination that comes from intellectual or mind, or how you train your mind, right? I mean, like if you do meditation or something, and if you concentrate or something, maybe your determination will be more. So that's another type of Shakti,
right? Absolutely right. Which comes from determination. From meditation, from conviction. See, when I'm convinced about something, like a freedom fighter who is fighting for the freedom of the country. Now, she is so determined, so they will go through any hardships. You know, she will go through hardships, even live in isolation, even give up the family, give up her body, comforts. Why? For the freedom of the country. So when I have a higher cause, like he said, when there is a higher cause, or like a mother who is in so love with her child, and the child, he says, is caught in a burning house, she will run in and risk her own body and sometimes even die in trying to save the child. She will run, save the child, throw him out the window, somebody will catch, but in the process she'll get burned. So that energy which comes from conviction or from love, where the mind loves or the intellect is convinced, then the body can get more energy. Yes, that is also Shakti. That is energy coming from a higher cause, like a cause of like love or conviction. Or like we saw some of these martyrs, you know, who were religious, spiritually convinced that their path was right, and somebody tried to even kill them or subjugate them. Like the Sikh gurus, you know, in India, the Muslims tried to convert them forcibly and they refused, and they were ready to give up their life but not give up their faith. So that is the energy that comes from higher belief. Yeah. That's true.
Okay, when children are, you know, they're in countries where there are starvation.
So right.
There's a point where they reach where, you know, you give them food and they can't.
Well, what happens is there are two things happen. One is the digestive system gets so weak that it cannot digest the food. And so even when you give them food, the body cannot handle it. So they say don't give them heavy food right in the beginning. You give them something light like juice or some, you know, electrolytes or water. So slowly train their digestive system to be able to digest the food. If they haven't, you know, been starved for weeks or months. But yes, starvation does affect the mental and intellectual capacity. Sustained starvation or undernutrition does affect, yes, their ability to think, their ability to function. But yeah, but the human body is capable of, you know, recuperating and getting well. But yeah, it needs careful feeding and nourishment.
Okay.